Come on up, sir. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please support Charles Sweet for the appellant?
Yes, sir. How much time would you like to reserve for rebuttal, sir?
5 minutes.
Yes, sir. You may begin when ready.
Thank you. The issue in this case is whether one can be found guilty of breaking and entering into a dwelling house armed with a deadly weapon with the intent to commit larceny. The Commonwealth's, if that deadly weapon is a screwdriver, the Commonwealth's evidence trial.
It's an interesting case, counsel. Let me see if I can get you to focus a little bit on what I think is going to be the critical determination of this case. Would you agree or disagree that an instrumentality can have a dual purpose?
It can.
All right. So in a situation, and let's make it not this case but another case, if a person had an ice pick and they were using an ice pick to do something, that ice pick could also be the deadly weapon, and it could also be used to do something that was not a deadly purpose.
It absolutely can. But the ice pick, my argument would be that it is not per se a deadly weapon.
Assuming that the case, that a screwdriver is not a per se, a flat-headed screwdriver, a deadly weapon, do you dispute that it can be used as a deadly weapon?
It can be used as a deadly weapon, and of course that is the case of
Well, we've said pieces of sidewalk and concrete have been deadly weapons.
Right.
You agree a screwdriver can be used as a deadly weapon?
Screwdriver can be used as a deadly weapon.
Thank you.
In the instant case, it was, as a matter of fact, used as a deadly weapon, I believe, subsequent to the completion of the breaking and entering.
Can we hone that down for a moment?
Yes, sir.
From what you say, I gather you concede, in light of the other convictions of your client, that the screwdriver was used as a deadly weapon in attacking the victim.
That was the evidence the Commonwealth presented, yes.
Well, do you concede that to be the point? It was used as a deadly weapon at that time?
Not at the time.
Not at the time.
Breaking and entering, and no. At the time when the breaking and entering was complete.
Okay, fine. That's the core of your argument. But again, I don't want to misrepresent what you say, but I think I'm correct that you have conceded that when the screwdriver was used in contact with the victim, it was a deadly weapon.
I don't think that can be disputed. Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you.
The point, I think it's kind of a metaphysical kind of an argument here.
I agree.
And it's a very narrow issue, and I really don't have too much to say, but I think that my argument is tracked with the three cases that I did cite in brief. And if you look at the Roland case is very important. The Roland case essentially says that a breaking and entering is complete upon the entering. Very simple. The breaking and entering is complete upon the entering. You go to the Pritchard case. The Pritchard case talks about what is a per se deadly weapon. And I think we'd all agree that a screwdriver is not a deadly weapon.
Per se.
Per se.
Per se.
However, a instrument can become, that is not a deadly weapon, can become a deadly weapon through the manner of use.
And that happened here.
And that happened here. The Pennell case. Now, of course, the appellant did use the screwdriver as a deadly weapon for the subsequent acts. But the argument that is being put forth today is that the breaking and entering, which he was found guilty on, count one, breaking and entering armed with a deadly weapon with the intention to commit larceny. Maybe if the argument were made that the intention was to commit rape, and he used it in the attempted rape later on, that would be, I don't think I'd have an argument.
But didn't the deadly weapon here facilitate the larceny?
The deadly weapon facilitated the larceny, but the manner of use at the time was not as a deadly weapon. The manner of use at the time was as a hand tool used to pry open a window.
You mean when breaking and entering?
This The appellant, and it's the Commonwealth's evidence, the appellant tries to gain entry. He can't do it. He tries to get through a window. Can't do it. Goes back to his work truck.
Gets a screwdriver.
He gets a screwdriver, one of his tools of his trade. And this is the Commonwealth's evidence. And he comes back. And he pries open that window, not thinking that anybody is inside. Commonwealth's evidence.
No. He told the FBI interpreter, I also took the evidence to intimidate her, or if somebody was inside. Didn't the Korean interpreter cite him as saying that, using the word intimidate?
I apologize. I thought that the Commonwealth's evidence was that he thought that nobody was...
No, I'm talking about the... The FBI, because of an interpreter problem, interviewed this guy. And they said, and I don't want to waste your time and quoted him. This is page 680 in the appendix. When asked why appellant had a screwdriver with him, his translated response is, it was just to make her threaten.
I would certainly argue that was in response to what he had done subsequently, not why he had that screwdriver initially, because if that were the case, he would have had the screwdriver with him prior to even trying to gain entry.
May I, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm going to try to summarize the issue in this case.
Yes, sir.
May a non-per se deadly weapon be retroactively defined as a deadly weapon based upon its subsequent use?
I don't believe so.
That question, and I'm going to ask the Commonwealth to address that exact question.
I think I would advance this argument. I think that this statute, armed with a deadly weapon, breaking and entering with armed with a deadly weapon, and with the intention to commit larceny therein, I believe that statute contemplates a per se deadly weapon.
If it contemplates a per se deadly weapon, then why do we have a developing case law that says that it doesn't necessarily have to be per se?
Well, not necessarily in the context of that particular crime. We're talking about even the cases that I cited that we're talking about, what is a deadly weapon, what's not. They're talking about different crimes here. So the definition comes to us through not necessarily breaking and entering armed with a deadly weapon.
It usually comes through robbery cases.
The cultural case. And, of course, the defendant admitted, the only reason I got this thing, or the only reason I made this thing, was to beat off dogs to cause bodily injury. There's no other use for this thing. He dropped it inside after he broke and entered. It was other use than a deadly weapon.
Why didn't your client drop it inside after he entered?
Well, he didn't. I have to ask.
But your argument, counsel, essentially, and it's an interesting one. It's a law school exam almost. Your argument is that the mens rea and the actus reus for the completion of this crime must coexist at the time that he uses the instrumentality for the breaking and entering.
And I think the plain, yes, sir. I think the plain words of the statute, you're breaking and entering armed with a deadly weapon. And then the Rowling case tells us that crime is over with the minute you walk through the window.
But if that is indeed the issue and the law school statement of the issue, couldn't a reasonable fact finder conclude that based upon your client's statements and the circumstances which existed, conclude that the use of the deadly weapon and the breaking and entering did indeed coexist?
My argument would be that evidence was not put into evidence by the Commonwealth, and so the motion to strike should have been sustained on insufficiency of the evidence.
All right, sir.
Thank you. All right.
Save the rest of your time for rebuttal. Yes, sir.
Now, Mr. Forster, I'm going to hit you with a hard, what I think is a hard question.
Just want to make sure I'm not screaming into the microphone. Is that all right?
Yes, sir. You're fine.
Okay.
May it please the Court, Stephen Forster, on behalf of the Commonwealth, we've been asking this Court to affirm the convictions below. To start,
Judge Haley has a question.
I have a question. It's obvious that the law is in Virginia that penal statutes are to be strictly construed. There's no evidence at the time of the breaking and entering that it was a deadly weapon. And so, accordingly, the question, as I put to defense counsel, is, may a non-per se deadly weapon be retroactively defined as a deadly weapon based upon its subsequent use?
And it's the Commonwealth's position that it can be.
Okay,
it
fine.
Yes.
Argue.
And the reason is we're looking at this in a vacuum. You know, we're taking the defendant's self-serving statements as though that's all that there is. Now, we need to look at this in the context of all of the evidence, which is what the jury had before it. This defendant had worked with the victim's husband for 10 years. He had been a frequent guest at the home. He was clearly familiar with the house. He was familiar with the car in the driveway. He was familiar with the neighborhood. And I would also agree there can be a dual purpose. While he may have intended to use the screwdriver to open the window, he also was fully aware that she was home and he testified. He was going to use it to threaten her. So while you can take and parse out the evidence and say, well, it was only used for this individual purpose at the time he opened the window, that would be disregarding all the other evidence that the jury had before it. And so I would say that while it had a dual purpose, he was fully aware when he entered the house, she was home, he intended to use it to threaten her, and because this is a factual determination, a defining deadly weapon, we're saying under all the facts and circumstances of this case, which the Supreme Court and several courts have repeatedly defined it, we look at this instrumentality and look at how it was used. We don't look at it in instant of time. How was it used in the aggregate? Well, he had knowledge she was home. He goes in. He doesn't just break in, drop the screwdriver, and says, I'm going to rob the place. I needed money. He carries it upstairs and immediately starts wielding it to the victim.
Would your answer be the same is if he used the screwdriver to break in, left the screwdriver outside, had an engagement with the woman inside, and went back outside and got the screwdriver? Would your answer be the same?
No, I think that would be a different scenario. I think that goes to an individual focus where he did. At the time of the breaking and entering, the temporal component, he drops the screwdriver. And then he goes up and realizes, oh, somebody's home. Then he comes back out to get the screwdriver to then use it subsequently as a deadly weapon. That's a very different scenario than when someone is aware, they break in, and almost instantaneously, he's up the stairs and it's immediately against her neck.
Well, again, here's counsel's argument at core. Penal statutes are strictly construed. A screwdriver is not a penal statute. The breaking and entered was completed. Is this a matter of statutory construction? I mean, that's the argument in this case. That's simply.
In response to your question, Your Honor, I would say that opposing counsel's argument is attempting to read into the statute that deadly weapon has to be a per se deadly weapon. That's not in the statute.
No. You're not. No. There is no dispute, I don't believe, that the screwdriver used during the break and entering is not a per se deadly weapon. Again, the question is, can it be retroactively defined at the time of the breaking and entering based upon its subsequent use as a deadly weapon, which counsel concedes it was so used?
And I would say absolutely. And again, the reason I'm relying on Panhill versus Commonwealth, Pritchett versus Commonwealth, Cox versus Commonwealth, Floyd versus Commonwealth, although in different contexts, we look at the subsequent use to determine if it was a deadly weapon.
So you would advance a totality of the circumstances argument to determine whether or not in this particular fact situation, in any particular fact situation, it meets the definition of the statute.
Yes, Your Honor, I would agree. And I would also cite the Wilson versus Commonwealth case, which is the baseball bat. Three individuals go up to the house, they kick down the door, and then they proceed to use the baseball bats to beat the victim inside the home. That's a very similar scenario. The bats weren't, you know, could have been used to assist in the breaking, but then they were subsequently used and determined to be a deadly weapon, which I think is a very fact.
And I'm just, again, trying to narrow things. Does the Commonwealth concede or stipulate, however you want to put it, that at the time of the breaking and entering, the flathead screwdriver was not a per se deadly weapon?
I would concede, yes, that it's not a per se deadly weapon at the time of the breaking and entering. The Commonwealth.
But we're narrowing this issue way down.
Well, I would agree. What we're looking at here is there's a mens rea component as to how the screwdriver was intended to be used by the defendant at the time he enters the home. And we can't just look at he opens the window and that's all. We look at it as what was his intent to use it, and then subsequently how did he use it. And that's what the jury was there to do. They were there as the fact finder to make that determination. And as the court notes in Bano, a screwdriver doesn't meet the definition of a per se deadly weapon. There are very few things that are per se. A loaded revolver, you have an axe, you have a
dirt. Well, counsel's conceded it was used as a deadly weapon when it was in contact with a...
Absolutely, but as the argument is on the other side, we're trying to break this down into two separate occurrences, and they weren't. It was one act, and we have to look at the mens rea of the defendant at the time he's entering, the time of the breaking and entering.
Well, the breaking and entering and the attempted rape weren't one act, were they?
I agree that they are not one act, but at the time he enters the home, what is his intent to use the screwdriver for? And that's the fact and circumstances which the jury considered. And at the time, again, he breaks and enters. He doesn't drop the screwdriver. He doesn't walk up the stairs. He doesn't then find her and come back down. He walks in and immediately wields it as a weapon against the victim. He testified that he intended to use it to threaten her. It shows that he knew
what,
she
he didn't testify to
that. I'm sorry, he told the interpreter that.
He told the interpreter that, the FBI people that.
Yes, exactly. So when we combine that with the subsequent acts and the facts and circumstances surrounding the entirety of the event, the jury is the fact finder. It was a reasonable conclusion, and a reasonable trier of fact could have found that at the time of the breaking and entering, he intended to use it as a deadly weapon. For that reason, the Commonwealth would have asked this court to affirm.
Why do we have to include the element of intent at the time he entered? Why does that have to be? Because obviously his intent when the screwdriver was in contact with the victim, he had the mens rea then, obviously, and conceded, basically. I mean, he was convicted of, this is the only of a no string of convictions, that's on appeal. So why do we have to get into his intent at the time he broke and entered?
Well, to take that argument to its logical conclusion, any non-per se deadly weapon at the time of the breaking could never be a deadly weapon. If someone uses a tire iron to smash the window to get in and then immediately beats the victim in the head...
No, maybe I didn't make my question clear.
I apologize for that.
No, that's quite all right. Did the mens rea to use this flat screwdriver, following up on Judge Alston's question, as a deadly weapon, have to exist when he broke in there? Or can it arise later?
Well, the statute contemplates it as a deadly weapon at the time of entry, but the deadly weapon can be determined on the subsequent facts and circumstances of its use.
Okay.
So when I...
So are you saying that he didn't have to intend its use as a deadly weapon when he entered the house, but he intended its use subsequently after being in the house?
I would respectfully disagree with that characterization. Based on all the surrounding circumstances of his familiarity with the house, the home, his comment to the interpreter, the Commonwealth's position is that he went back to the vehicle to get the screwdriver to use it as an instrumentality, as a deadly weapon. He didn't go back just to get the screwdriver to get into the home. That wasn't his intent. When he broke and entered, he intended to use it as a deadly weapon. He then looked at how it was subsequently used as a subsequent act to determine what he intended to do when he picked up the screwdriver.
So the other facts are corroborative of what his intention was when he broke into the house.
Yes. Yeah. And I think that on brief, I cite the cases that talk about, you know, the moment you're armed or the moment you pick up the weapon, it's the moment you're armed. And we look at, you know, as a totality of the circumstances to determine what was the intent of arming yourself with that instrumentality. And again, I think it's, you know, Commonwealth has cited several cases on brief on point. The Sauer case, again, out of Washington, it's not binding, it's merely persuasive, but it was essentially the exact same scenario we have here. It was an individual defendant who put the screwdriver to the victim's neck and then, you know, threatened her.
Well, counsel has conceded it was used as a deadly weapon for the robbery, or when it was at her throat.
I think we understand the argument, Mr. Forster.
All right. There are no further questions. Again, Tom Wolf would ask you to affirm. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right, Mr. Swedish, did you want to take another little shot?
A little shot.
Yes, sir.
Mens rea is an element of every crime. And I argue that mens rea cannot be developed after the crime has been committed. In other words, if I run over a guy, and then later on I say, good thing I ran over that guy because I really hated him, but I didn't know the guy. No, the mens rea doesn't make it murder because I developed this mens rea later on. It's still maybe a manslaughter, maybe just an accident.
He certainly, when he broke and entered, by your own statements, had the mens rea to use it in breaking and entering, didn't he?
He had the mens rea.
I mean, if he'd been charged with burglarous tools.
Right. To use it to break and enter. And that is the manner of use that it was used, to break.
Okay. All right. So he had the mens rea, and I don't think anybody disputes that he did when he broke and entered. Indeed, you say he went back to his car and got a screwdriver because he couldn't get the window open without it.
He went back to his car to get a tool to effectuate the entry.
The B&E, yeah.
The mens rea in this crime, breaking and entering, with the intention to commit larceny therein, the mens rea is, I'm going to steal stuff in that house, I got to get in. He does get in.
But the mens rea, when the screwdriver was in contact with the victim, was a different mens rea.
And once again, I conceded
that
something which is not per se and something which is not used originally as a deadly weapon can later on subsequently become. I believe counsel for the Commonwealth also conceded that at the time of the breaking and entering, it was not a per se.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's not before. I mean, yeah, everybody has conceded. You've conceded it was used as a deadly weapon with the appropriate mens rea after the breaking and entering, and everybody agrees that to be the case. And everybody agrees it wasn't a deadly weapon when he broke in.
And I think the point that I'm just going to emphasize is we're talking about mens rea. And mens rea is an element of the crime. The crime we're talking about is breaking and entering armed with a deadly weapon and with the intention to commit larceny. And the Rowland case makes it quite clear. That crime is over the minute you walk through the window.
Okay.
It's done. And my argument would be mens rea cannot be developed after the fact. By example of the running the guy over.
Well, you're not arguing that he didn't intend to put the screwdriver to this woman's throat, are you?
My argument is that the Commonwealth's evidence was, as presented by the Commonwealth, was that he did not know anybody was inside the house.
Well, whether he did or didn't know, he certainly had the mens rea when he put the screwdriver to the woman's throat, the mens rea for that crime, didn't he?
That mens rea was developed and existed after the crime of breaking and entering.
Okay, all right.
I think we understand the argument, Mr. Swedish. We appreciate your presentation. We'll come down and greet counsel.